We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you. We're enjoying these winter months still. Thank you so much. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring noted author and lecturer Manus Friedman come out with a new book on intimacy. One of his favorite topics, I'm sure. Yes, indeed, you'll like that. We have a wonderful assortment of music sprinkled throughout the show. Believe it or not, we are less than 30 days before the holiday of Passover, and we'll be playing a little Passover-esque music and kind of connecting things up to Passover in our build-up for the Passover holiday, which is the last weekend of March. The portion of the week is a portion of Vayakhel. We are ending the book of Exodus. We've got a terrific Hasidic story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. One person was killed and two others arrested when a boat off the Gaza coast strayed from the permitted fishing area and entered restricted military waters. After repeated warnings, IDF forces opened fire on the suspicious boat, hitting one of the three suspects on board. The U.S. diplomatic mission in Israel urged Americans there to keep a low profile following last week's announcement that the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem will be open in May. American diplomats in Israel and their families are prohibited from travel in the West Bank. The number of anti-Semitic incidents in the United States more than doubled in 2017, according to a new report by the Anti-Defamation League. There were 1,986 acts of anti-Semitism in the U.S. last year. This fits into the category of, okay, Prince William, Britain's Duke of Cambridge, will be the first ever official British royal to visit Israel. During the expected trip, William will also visit Jordan and the PA. And finally, okay, all of you mycologists, researchers in Israel commercially cultivated desert truffles whose market price reaches $120 a pound. The process involves a symbiosis between the fungus Teraphisa leonis, which occurs rarely and unpredictably in nature, and the common desert shrub Helianthemum sessiliforum. And now you know. You can do it home. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hey, Schulferman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Let's start up with a little lively music. This is Mendy J, new on the music scene. The piece is called Masechta Brachos, which basically means sort of like, let's start right from the beginning.
בואי בשלום עטרת בלה גם בשמחה ובצעולה חמונה ים סגולה בואי קלה בואי קלה חמונה ים סגולה steigt in die gemure sagt mir sagt das bruch sehe mir khamisho khamisho koloy oy oy sim 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 mazu mazu toy ye hey hey lanu ul khon khon dis rawe sim 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 mazu mazu toy hey hey lanu ul khon dis rawe sim 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 mazu mazu toy hey hey שלום עטרת בלה גם בשמחה ופצלה תוך אמוני המסגולה בואי קלה בואי קלה תוך אמוני המסגולה בואי קלה בואי קלה תוך אמוני המסגולה בואי קלה בואי קלה Steiten die Gemüde, man sagt das, was sich des Bruch ist. Kolam ist am Meer, ja, Chasson wie Kano. Steiten die Gemüde, man sagt das, was sich des Bruch ist. Seuche wie Chamisho, Chamisho Kolo. Oi, oi, simen, 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 tevu, mazu, mazu, toi. Yehe, ilonu, lechol, lechol, isrog, wen, oi. Simen, 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 tevu, mazu, mazu, toi. Yehe, ilonu, לכל ישראל צימן 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 תבו מזו מזו טוי יאי לנו לכל לכל ישראל צימן 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 תבו מזו מזו טוי יאי
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Let's listen to another piece of some music. This is also brand new. This is from last week. The artist's name is Yisrael Adler. And it's called Ki HaMitzvah Hazos, because of this mitzvah. Let's listen.
Awesome.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are in the time period between Purim and Passover. And we say that there is an intrinsic connection between the two holidays, even though Purim happened chronologically after Passover, about 800 years and change afterwards. But there is a direct connection because it says that in the years when there is two Adars, in a Hebrew leap year where we had an extra month. So there's a question as to, well, do we do Purim as soon as we possibly can in the first Adar, or do we do it in the second one, which is sort of like closer in seasonal time? And we answer that we do it in the second year, second month, which we'll be doing this next year. We do it in the second month because we want to be mismach geula legeula. We want to discern and talk about and connect the redemption which happened on Purim to the redemption which happened on Passover. And so therefore, we see there is a direct connection between the two. But it's not just a calendar connection. That would be easy, you know, just like. Rather, it is intrinsic as to what the holidays are. Now, we could ask, well, Passover celebrates the birth of the Jewish people. There are many things that we do during a course of our day, year, and lifetime to remember the Exodus. Okay, so of course we celebrate the Passover, which talks with the retelling of the Passover story every year as one of the commandments. I think Napoleon was very impressed with the Jews because he was walking through, I don't know, some place, one street somewhere, and he heard singing going on in a Jewish house, and he asked, what is that? And he said, they're celebrating their exodus from Egypt more than close to 2,000 years ago, or whatever, more than 3,000 years ago. And Napoleon said something to the effect, and you can send me the exact quote to rabbifinman.com if you know it, something to the effect of that a people that remembers its history will survive its future, something profound like that. So, but we do have this commandment of remembering that we left Egypt specifically with this telling of the story of the Haggadah, the Exodus, the miracles that happened there, the eating of the matzah to commemorate the matzah back then. So those are easy. But we do other mitzvahs as well. We say the Shema, our declaration that God is one, is a remembrance that we left Egypt every day. We wear tzitzis, these strings on the corners of our garments, to remind us, you know, we could say Jews come with strings attached, that we left Egypt. We keep the Sabbath, actually. We know that keeping the Sabbath is in order to remind us that God created the world, but in the opening prayer that we say before we sit down to eat, we say, Zeche Letzias Mitzrayim. We are celebrating this to remind us that we left Egypt. Jews are told that they cannot charge interest one to the other. As a remembrance that, yes, we all left Egypt. The tefillin, the special things, boxes, prayer boxes, which are worn during the weekdays by Jewish men, is to remind us that we left Egypt. So here we have, this is like a focal point. There's another half a dozen or so, maybe 10 other commandments that are done specifically to remind us that we left Egypt. What's so big? What's so important about remembering? Is it really so important? I mean, you know, you're talking about maybe going through a very good part. I couldn't put a percentage on it, but it's more than 10% of our lifetime we're spent remembering that we left Egypt. Aside from the fact that the Exodus of Egypt was like number three in the miracles, number two being the splitting of the sea, and number one being the Sinaitic revelation. Aside from that. But the Exodus of Egypt melded the Jewish family, the children of Jacob, into the Jewish people. And with that, gave them, or gave us, the purpose, our mission, our walking papers, you might say. What are we here for? Abraham was told that your children are going to be the chosen people. So at what point, when she says they're going to be, that meant that Abraham was not the chosen people. He said, your children are going to be the chosen people. So Isaac was not the chosen people because there's only one of them. And we could continue this line of rational, and the people, the Jewish, this children of Jacob became the Jewish people and became therefore the chosen people with the Exodus of Egypt. It's like you would say the birth of the Jewish nation. Then the question becomes, well, chosen for what? Jews don't believe that they're better than anybody else. We're not ethnocentric. And we're never in the position to be ethnocentric. However, Jews are looked upon and expected to be in a certain way. And if Jews are not in a certain way, everybody jumps up and down and gets very, very excited. I'll give you an example. When I was in eighth grade, I wouldn't say a bit of a nerd, but I used to get the New York Times every day. Because when I was in eighth grade, the student edition, which was a regular student price for the New York Times, was 3 cents. What a bargain! So even then, I mean, I think the paper was a quarter. So every day. So this is like, I'm getting it, 3 cents. This is like, whoa. I think it was like one of like five kids in the entire junior high that got the New York Times. And I used to read the New York Times, so for most of my entire eighth grade, there was a news coverage of a certain individual. His name was Rabbi something. I mean, it doesn't bother mentioning his name now. He's passed on. And he was accused of what basically was the first nursing home scandal in America. And he was doing some really heinous stuff over there, aside from the fact that he was double billing Medicaid, and he was billing for patients who passed away. In addition to that, his nursing homes were basically squalor. They were hard living conditions, terrible. You wouldn't do this to what he did to a cockroach. You wouldn't do to what he did to people. Terrible. So for much of eighth grade, his trial was ongoing. And for much of his trial, his picture was on the front page of the New York Times. And he was an older gentleman. He had a white beard, and his complexion was sort of like lighter. And he had a black yarmulke. And every picture that they had of him really showed prominently the black yarmulke, the black covering on his head. Sort of an indication, look, this guy calls himself a rabbi. This guy walks around with that thing on his head. And he's doing this? So anybody doing that should be looked upon as saying, and he's doing that, but because this guy was a rabbi, we're saying he should definitely not have been doing that. So this is how the world looks at the Jewish people. That's the responsibility of being chosen. It's the Jew's job. The Rebbe would say it's our job to, first of all, be like a light to ourselves, to within our own, that we have to show. People ask me, what do I do? I says, I show people about Judaism. I don't tell people about Judaism. People tell me, listen, Rabbi, I don't want to do such and such. My response generally is, I don't care. I really don't care if you do or if you don't, which is a really shocking thing for a rabbi to say. But it's your life and the relationship that you have with the Almighty. It's your business. But what I do is I show people that the ins and outs of Judaism are really the best thing to do. But then, after that, the Lubavitcher Rebbe expressed that we have to be, quote-unquote, a light to the nations. There are seven Noahide commandments, for example, of believing in God, not believing in one God, not worshiping idols, not committing adultery, theft, or murder, not being cruel to animals, and establishing courts of law, legislative bodies, and police forces to maintain the other six. So part of our job as being the quote-unquote chosen people was to teach, to show the rest of the world how they're supposed to act. You know, and it's interesting. So it says that Mashiach would have come a long time ago. If people would just act the way people are supposed to act. There's a book written by the Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1943. I think it was his first published work, if I'm not mistaken. It's a collection of daily insights. And people have been reading it every day, one little tiny paragraph. I'm talking tiny. We're talking like mottos and little sayings to get you through the day, that type of a thing, like a living each day type thing. So just recently we had a whole thing about going out in the street. And it says right now in Hebrew, the way that you say like the whole category of inanimate, which inanimate is... In English means it doesn't move. In Hebrew, it's domain, which means it's quiet. So he says they're called quiet now, but when the Messiah comes, the rocks aren't going to be quiet anymore. It's based on a verse, and I believe in the book of Ecclesiastes. So it says that a rock is sitting there, and sitting there for almost 6,000 years. And all kinds of animals have been walking over this rock. And then when two Jews walk on top of this rock, and they're not engaged in some sort of Torah discussion or something having to do with Judaism, the rock says, what makes you better than the animals? So it says, this is really what we're supposed to be worried about. There's an expression in Yiddish, menschlich, to be a mensch. Be a mensch doesn't mean to be a man. The word mensch, in German, you have München and Frühen, but in Yiddish, the word mensch means to be a responsible, dedicated person who acts the way a person is supposed to act. Now, the opposite of a mensch in Yiddish would be a Wildechaya, which means a wild animal. So you're not saying this person's a bear, but he's acting like a wild animal, without restraint, improper. A mensch does menschliche things. So Passover celebrates this responsibility that we have. Now we come to Purim. What's the deal with Purim? We're talking 800 years later. The Jews are not living in Israel. The book of Esther doesn't have any mention of God in it, such that when it came time for the men of the great assemblage to include it in the Bible, they didn't want to, but there was some heavy lobbying and politicking, and it was finally included and incorporated in the Bible. And what does it celebrate more than the Jews having an adversary who wanted to wipe them out? Because that's happened many, many times over the millennia. Purim wasn't the first time, and Purim was not the last time. But there's this idea at the end of the book. It says, V'kibul ha-Yehudim es asher he-chilu la'aseis. The Jews accepted upon themselves. It took that 800 years for the Jews to step up and say, you know, we're going to take the responsibility of being the chosen people at this point. Because up until that point, if you look through the book of Judges and the book of Samuel and the book of Kings, you see the Jews had a very much laissez-faire attitude about their Judaism. It would be basically akin to going to synagogue on Saturday and going to church on Sunday. They just, you know, if it felt good, they did it, whatever was going on. Okay, they were worshiping God. They were worshiping idols. If they like doing a mitzvah, they like doing a mitzvah. I've mentioned this before. Elijah had a contract on his head from the Queen Jezebel, but she wanted to kill him. But Elijah trusted the kosher of her kitchen. You know, what's the fact that she wanted to kill him had nothing to do with the fact that she ate kosher. She ate kosher because she wanted to do that. Comes along Purim, and in Purim, with the story with Mordechai and this rededication of the Jewish people to the ideals of Judaism. So now the Jews took upon themselves and said, oh yeah, Passover, 800 years ago. That's why when discussing as to when Purim should be in a leap year, we use the expression mismach geula legeula. We place in proximity one redemption with the other redemption because Purim is the finality, you might say, of Passover. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we're going to be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Why go anywhere else when you go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This is a really cool piece we got coming up. So I went looking through the depths of the Jewish Hour archives for music and came up with a really interesting piece. This is Passover-esque. And it's also klezmer-esque, and I'm saying esque because it's not really, it's one of those klezmer fusion pieces. The band is called the Fourth Ward Afro-Klezmer Orchestra, and this is an original piece. It's called the East Atlanta Klezmer Passover Stomp, and is it just for you?
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals?
Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Rabbi Manus Friedman, noted author and lecturer, just came out with a book, The Joy of Intimacy. How are you today, Manus?
Thank God.
Good to hear. Okay, let me ask you. Intimacy seems to be your thing, and this is a brand new book about intimacy, and there's lots of books about intimacy, and you've even written books about intimacy. So what's new in human behavior? What's going out in the cosmos? Whatever, what's that we have the joy of intimacy?
Yeah, there are many books. Many books written on relationships, but they never really get down to the definition of what it means to be intimate and for two people to kind of merge into this bond that marriage is supposed to produce. And I noticed that this is a very serious, it's reached serious proportions when happily married couples, functional marriages, they have no complaints, they're doing great, everything's fine, and yet each of them will admit that at moments they feel all alone in the world. Now, that's not supposed to happen. The first thing that changes when you get married is that you're no longer alone in the world. In fact, the Torah says, therefore, a man should leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife to become one. So you're no longer alone in the world. That's the fundamental, bare minimum result of being married. So trying to figure out why that's happening. What is this aloneness that we're all suffering from? And I read in Wall Street Journal, I think it was, that in England, the health department opened a special branch to deal with the problem of loneliness.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because loneliness.
The Minister of Loneliness.
Yeah. Because when you feel alone, I guess your immune system crashes or something. And then you become vulnerable to every passing disease and illness. So they're actually spending a lot of money to heal this, because it's the root of many, many problems. So why is it not happening? I can understand if a couple don't get along. You know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. What do you expect?
Mm-hmm.
But when they do get along, and they're happily married, and they're still alone in the world, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to me that this is something earth-shattering or a new problem. I mean, I'm reminded, you wouldn't know such things, but I know that when I was a kid, there was a lyric from a Beatles song that said, "She's leaving home after living alone for so many years." So that was like 1970 about then. So the problem of loneliness has always been, I mean, it's one of the seven major themes in literature is alienation and loneliness. And I mean, it's discussed in the Iliad by, you know, and we're going back millennia. So
you're just making the problems.
Yeah, it's like we're this is an older problem than we're making. This isn't just because, I mean, the idea of commitment might be because Woodstock grew up. But the idea of people being alone, even in relationships, doesn't seem to be like anything new. But maybe you got a new twist on how to deal with it. That might be worth talking about.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think that people are so social. We have so many friends. We have so many contacts. We have so many likes on our online. We travel. We meet people. I don't think we're lonely, and yet we are alone. So we've tried desperately to fix that by being more open, more available, more vulnerable, and all we're doing is getting hurt. And the problem is not getting solved. So I think the real solution, and it's been working really dramatically, is that people have to switch from relating to each other because of the things we see in each other and really connect just person to person. So, for example, a man says, I love everything about my wife. So I ask him, but do you love her? He says, I love everything about her. I said, that's nice, but do you love her? He says, what about her? I said, no, not about her. Do you love her? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. I think there's where the problem lies. You can be married to many things about someone without really touching or reaching the person himself.
Okay.
And in fact, we don't even know what that means. If you take all things away, what's left? We're so focused on things. So if a guy says, I married you for your money, everybody would say, come on, that's ridiculous. In fact, you didn't marry her for her money. You married the money. You were never married to her. So look at what's happening in the relationships. If we fall out of love, then I don't understand what you're doing in my house. What are you doing here? I married the love, and all I have is you?
Okay.
So if you marry someone for their money, you're not marrying someone, you're marrying the money. So here's the shocker. If I marry you for love, is that any better? If I marry you for love, what am I married to? I'm married to love, not to you. Even religiously, people serve God, worship God, believe in God, because God is love. If God is love, then love is God. So are you worshiping God or are you worshiping love? Or has love become God? So I think in America, we worship love. We die for it, we kill for it, we do everything in the name of love.
Okay, so
let me just
jump in. If you're just tuning in, our guest today is Manus Friedman, written a book called The Joy of Intimacy. So, Manus, what do you propose then? Are there exercises in The Joy of Intimacy that will then propel people to love each other rather than loving something about them or even loving the concept of being in love?
Well, the first thing is we have to remove the love. Love is getting in the way.
I'm just going to be real glib right now, but right now what's coming through my head is the scene in Fiddler on the Roof where she turns to him and says, do you love me? Or he says to her. I mean, that's like, you know, they've been living for 25 years and the whole concept of love never even existed, but they were definitely, and I don't know if you saw Fiddler, but they were definitely a loving couple. They were love with each other. Yeah, as the song ends, I do. You know, so then if we remove the love, then what are we doing?
Okay, so I think that's a perfect example. He says, Tevye says, do you love me? And Golda says, for 25 years, I've washed your clothes and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So he asks her about love, and she says, I do the laundry. What she's really saying, and this is the wisdom of the writer, what she's really saying is, what are you asking? Do I love you? Meaning, am I giving you my love? For 25 years, I give myself to you. You have me. I'm all yours. And all you want to think about is love? That's childish. So she's really the mature one. Tevye is kind of a childlike guy. So this is the perfect example for we have each other. Do we love everything about each other? Maybe not. Well, not today, anyway. So today I don't like you particularly, but you're mine and I am yours. And those words are so much more powerful than I love you. I love you is fickle, it's flimsy, compared to the experience of being mine, being yours. And that part our grandparents had. People say, no, grandparents, you don't know that they were happily married. They just couldn't get divorced because divorce wasn't acceptable. They may have been miserable. And the whole point is, they may have been miserable, but they wouldn't give each other up for anything. They had each other, and they didn't like many things about each other. And we turned it around. I gotta like everything about you, or I don't need you at all. And that's why they were not alone, we are alone. So the first thing is, we gotta stop marrying love. The second thing is, we got to stop marrying pleasure. I've heard that the experts are now admitting that they made a terrible mistake by emphasizing pleasure. How to get more pleasure out of the relationship? How to get more pleasure out of the bedroom? How to get maximum pleasure from your physical intimacy? And they now realize we don't need more pleasure. Our generation has more pleasure than any generation of the past. We don't need more pleasure because we have chocolate. All year round, we have chocolate. What we need in our relationships, they say now, is closeness. The Torah says, in a marriage, no, not closeness, oneness. Closeness you have with your neighbor. So how do we get past things? That is the key definition of intimacy. Intimacy means I am bonded to you without anything between us. Not that we meet at a third point. It's not that we both love tennis. It's that we are bonded to each other, and the things will come and go.
Okay, let me jump in over here, Mattis. Let me jump in over here. Okay, so people are listening to you and they're reading this book and they have this like epiphany and they're saying, this is too hard. So now what's gonna happen? I mean, you've just turned around everything that people have been raised with as to what should be a proper relationship and said, no, we want you to do something else. So this actually sounds much harder than just trying to do what it says in all of the marriage counseling and relationships books.
It does sound that way, but once you think about it, nature dictates that emotions be flighty, unpredictable. It's the nature of emotions. It's really what makes it exciting. Love is exciting because it's somewhat unpredictable. Moods switch, moods change, things upset you. You never know how you're going to feel tomorrow. So here's another shocker. And intuitively, it does make sense. There's no such thing as unconditional love. Everybody wants unconditional love. There's no such thing. if love is unconditional, it's not love anymore. It's not an emotion anymore. So if parents say to their child, I love you unconditionally, the child feels rejected. Because I love you unconditionally means you don't count. You don't matter. Because whichever way you act, no matter how you turn out, no matter what your personality or behavior is, I will love you anyway. Well, then fine, you're loving a fantasy. Very often when parents tell children we love you unconditionally, the child will purposely, maybe consciously or unconsciously, but the child will act out. They don't want it. They want you to react to them. So when I'm being lovable, love me. But when I'm not, I'm real. React to me. What is unconditional is the relationship itself. The fact. I am your mother. I will always be your mother. There's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing I can do about that. I'm your mother. And that's unconditional. You know how unconditional that is?
It doesn't change.
I am your mother even when I hate you.
Okay, so let me ask you then, Manus. You've written this book, and The Joy of Intimacy. Have you counsel a lot of people, because a lot of people come to you for advice. Have you given them this advice, and how did it work?
Overnight, the relationship changes for the better. And it's even if only one of them get it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Once you put things aside, you've opened the door to true intimacy. And that intimacy is something we desperately need naturally. And therefore, if you don't interfere, it's going to happen. You don't have to do anything to become one. You just have to remove the obstacles. And removing the obstacles is a little tricky because we think love is the connector when in fact it's getting between us. And the same is true of sexual pleasure. The pleasure should be that we have each other, not that we do something together.
That's an interesting
point.
So
if you ask your grandmother, or maybe your great-grandmother, what happens in the bedroom? Your grandmother would say, nothing. And you say, come on, tell me. And the grandmother says, nothing. And you think she doesn't want to answer your question, but she did answer your question, and it's the best answer in the world. A bedroom is a no-thing zone. Outside the bedroom, you can relate to each other through things. Common interests, common disinterests. You can argue, you can disagree, you can. But when it comes to the bedroom, no thing is allowed in a bedroom. A bedroom is just a place for him and her, and neither of them is a thing. Pornography makes people into things. Pornography also makes intimacy into a thing. And in a bedroom, no things are allowed. It's just them. There's no thing. When two people are being intimate, they're beyond all things.
Okay,
they're getting pleasure from having each other, not from a performance, not from an event.
Mm-hmm. This is fascinating. We could go on, but unfortunately, the hour is coming to a conclusion over here. So, the book is called The Joy of Intimacy. Manus Friedman, you have a website. People want to find out more and get in touch with you.
Yes. It's goodtoknow.org.
It's goodtoknow.org. Not you're telling me it's good to know. It's the whole thing. It's is part of this the website.
Yeah.
It's good to know. With no apostrophe, because you can't put apostrophe on a website.
No.
itsgoodtoknow.org, and people can get in touch with. Again, the book is The Joy of Intimacy, and written by Manus Friedman. And we want to thank you so much for coming in. This is fascinating, Manus, and we could go on forever, and wish you continued success and look forward to the next time when we can have you on.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. You want to get in touch with me? Make a comment, criticism, question, query, anything you want. Go to rabbifinman.com. And right there on the homepage, we have the Contact Us link. You contact me, I contact you. Everything becomes great, or greater than it is, because things are pretty cool. You'll also find on rabbifinman.com archived editions of the show. Did you miss the show last week, the Purim show, about laughter and Let There Be Laughter? That was a great show. Ooh, that's a good book. Michael Krasner, or anything before Hannah Finman before that, you know, what's going on in Jewish New York, the new museum's going up over there. It's all there on the website. There's also the archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, things which I'm presenting to Judaism in an entertaining and educational way. You'll also find the donations page. You go there. March is membership month. So want to be a member of the Jewish Hour family? No problem. Go to Jewish Hour. Go to rabbifinman.com. Go to the donations page. Donate $36. Become a member. We're now entering our 23rd year on air. Every $36 donation receives or more. Will receive a CD from the Jewish Hour archives, some kind of Jewish music. Specify if you want any specific genre of Jewish music. They're all there. And do that today, and then you'll be part of the family, because it's people like you and the family of listeners that have joined for these last 22 years, making this program possible. You're listening, which means if you listened all the way to to where we are now up into the show, that means you like it. So help pay for it. Yes. Don't like doing internet giving? Understand. Send your donation of any amount to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Now, there is a Passover is coming up. It's the end of the month. Jews eat matzah on Passover, and it is very much encouraged that a person eat shmura matzah, which is matzah which is guaranteed from the time of the harvest to the time that you put it, that is put into the box. That it is not coming with water. There's no chance of any chametz, no chance of any leavening whatsoever. So I would say go to rabbifinman.com and send me a note. Tell me you want shmura matzah, and we'll make arrangements for you to get it. I personally sell it. We have a whole operation at Jewish Ferndale. We sell two types of whole wheat matzah, spelt and oat. Spelt is for those people who have low tolerance of wheat, and oat is for people who are gluten-free. And you can contact me on rabbifinman.com, and we'll set you right up. The story today actually involves matzah. 1945, following World War II, the Skelena Rebbe, Rabbi Elezer Zusha Portugal, who later moved to the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn, found himself in the Russian sector following World War II. And
They knew that they were going to get help from various parts of the world for Passover, but he very much wanted to have this shmura matzah, this special matzah. So that meant that he had to go find wheat, and he had to make sure that the wheat had not come in contact with water and have it specially prepared. And he sent out a missive to all the other rebbes that he could give them three matzahs and three matzahs only. So when it came time, he actually got this whole thing all together. So a representative of the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, whose name was Moshe Heber, who later became the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, he was the son of Baruch Heber, who was the Rebbe of Vizhnitz at the time, that this Moshe Heber said that his father demanded six matzahs. He must give him six matzahs. So this Kalina Rebbe was not a person who would be oppositional, say, no, I only have three matzahs for you. No. He gave the Vizhnitzer six matzahs. The day before Passover, this same Moshe Heber came and said, I'm giving you back three matzahs. And the Kalina Rebbe said, I don't understand. He was so adamant that I give him six matzahs. What's the deal? So the Vizhnitzer Rebbe's son said, did you save any matzahs for yourself? And the Skelener said, there were so many people that needed matzah, how could I save for myself? So he said, my father knew that that's what we were going to do. And therefore, he insisted that you give him six matzahs, three matzahs for himself, and three matzahs for yourself. That's going to do it. We're glad we had a chance to listen. You listened in to us. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.